Okay, Yeruam.
Masechet Sanhedrin, New Mishnah, Perek, third chapter, page Kaf Gimel Amud Aleph 23a. So the Gemara says that it's a good idea that this happens, because then the judgment will be acceptable to the litigants. Why? Because each one thinks they at least have someone representing their view on the judging panel. And therefore, that at least their arguments be put across. Someone who's going to like listen to me.
So it's one picks one, the other one picks seven, and the two pick a third one.
Well, it says in the Matlokah between Rabbi Meir and Hachamim. Rabbi Meir says that each of the litigants agree between them a third one, and the Hachamim states that the judges themselves pick a third one.
Because I think nowadays it's judges themselves that pick it.
Well, usually when you're drafting contracts, as I did for many years, Baruch Hashem, so when you come to write the arbitration or litigation clause at the end, you usually pick only one judge. But if you pick three, you say either agreed by mutual consent, or if not, then decided by the judges. Right, so you have the option. Mutual consent is usually better, but if not. So either way, so then the judges, so then the litigants will accept the position, because they'll believe that at least got one person on their side. But that's the position of the litigant. The position of the judge, so we're talking in theory, not in practice, but in theory the judge can't be biased. He can't be for one party or another. So from his perspective, he's been appointed by someone, so he's got a duty to at least examine that person's case very carefully. Well, he appointed me, so at least I should look and see.
Can he determine whether he has a conflict of interest and exclude himself because of conflict of interest?
Depends what we mean by conflict of interest. There are Torah laws about being passel, and anything else that's not in the Torah, meaning the law covers what conditions you're allowed to judge a case and what conditions you're not. Anything outside that is something that the judge judge made up. I mean, it's not true, but I guess he could, I guess he can excuse himself. I don't know, there's nothing I've seen that suggests that he has to take the case so far. Maybe we'll see in the chapter.
I mean, I'm thinking, like, in civil cases, if he has a financial interest with one of the litigants.
So, in Jewish law, too, if he has, Jewish law, too, we saw a case in the Gemara of Lina de Rebbe, but I'm not sure, who had a delivery person who used to deliver him figs.
Where was that? I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't know. He used to deliver figs every week. And he had a court case. Mm-hmm. Now, he was allowed to judge the court case, because just because someone's working for you is not a problem, right? If you go to the local makolet, the person behind the counter is serving you, well, does that mean you're disqualified? Because he's now helping you out. So no. So the person who delivered figs wasn't disqualified. He wasn't disqualified on the judge, but why? On this particular week, he brought the figs a day early. So Rebbe got a benefit of one day earlier getting the figs. And he said that benefit was not paid for. So that's considered to be a bribe. Any benefit I get, even if it was unintentional. He didn't do it to bribe me, but because I got a benefit, so then the Torah says that even the value of a peruta, minimal value, can sway the opinion of even the wisest person.
Right, so that's what I'm saying.
So there has to be, if you can identify an interest, then yes.
Okay.
By Torah law, he would be forbidden, not just excuse himself as a possibility, he would have to, obligated to stand down.
So that is covered then?
Under that law?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. But let's say it's not covered by the law. Like I'm imagining, for example, let's say there's a woman comes in as one of the litigants, and the judge really likes this woman. She's very attractive in his eyes. Right, there's no Torah law, as far as I'm aware, that would require him to excuse himself on those accounts. He's got no financial interest. He's got no. He's not a relative. He's not a right. He just likes the look of that woman. Right? Could he excuse himself in that case? Even though there's no Torah rule that says that he needs to.
I don't know. So I mean, it's tough. I mean, ideally, he shouldn't be doing that.
Oh, but we're talking reality. If that's what he finds happens, and that's for sure. I mean, that for sure happens. So it's a I know it's a good question. Can a judge excuse himself for a reason other than one of the Torah laws? It's a good question. Okay, let's move on. So that's the first ruling of the Mishnah, and it's a machloket as to who picks the third one. Okay. Right, next, the next rule of the Mishnah, rule number two. You're splitting the Mishnah up into different rules, so we're now up to rule number two. So rule number one is how you pick the judges. The three judges, how do you get to three? One picks one picks another, machloket on who picks the third. Rule number two. Zeh posel dayano shel zeh. The zeh posel dayano shel zeh. This one can disqualify, can posel, the judge of this one. And this one can disqualify the judge of that one. Right? So here we're talking about the first two judges, apparently not the third one. But the first two at least. There may be different opinions, maybe also the third one. If you can disqualify the first two, why can't you disqualify the other one that's picked? Huh?
In one case they both chose.
Okay. But according to the second opinion, Hachamim have to deal with this Mishnah. Right? Hachamim have to agree with the Mishnah. So they would have to explain a reason why apparently he doesn't disqualify him, or maybe he does as well. Yeah. The third one.
He said the two guys they select to serve. Because when the judge they can maybe they two but when both look for the serve together
they come. But let's see what it means to disqualify anyway. So according to this opinion, that's Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says they can disqualify, and he doesn't put any conditions on it. So we're going to see from the next opinion, he again disagrees with the machloket with the Hachamim. So we see from the machloket that the Hachamim do put a condition on the disqualification, which means that there was no condition on the disqualification of Rabbi Meir, meaning that you can disqualify for any reason. You just say, I don't like him. I don't want this guy. Why not? I don't want him. So he can prevent any judge just on his say-so. Hachamim Omrim, something different. They say, Em Atai, when is he allowed to disqualify? Bizman Shemevi Aleihem Ra'aya, only when he brings proof. Shehen Krovim or Pasulim, that they are related or they're ineligible. They're already passed off for a different reason. Aval im hayu kasherim, but if they were kosher people, meaning they weren't relatives, or mumchim, or they were experts, mipi beitin, eino yachol l'posel, he can't posel. Not lashon hara if it's needed. It's needed to disqualify a judge. If you know this judge is a thief, right? Then it's not lashon hara to say you want to disqualify because he's a thief. You're saying not, something bad about him, but you have no choice.
What if the expert, certified expert, is disqualified because he's relative of one of the litigants?
So he's not allowed to be a judge if he's a relative.
Right, because it's this or.
Right, meaning or you only need one of them to be disqualified, meaning you don't need both.
Okay.
Either a relative, or he's not a certified judge. I know here it says, or he's a certified judge in the positive. If he's a certified judge, then you can't disqualify them, but it doesn't mean that if he's a certified judge, he cannot be disqualified. It means you can't disqualify him on the grounds of not being fit to judge. Either the we're going to see later in the Gemara, one of the reasons you can get rid of a judge is if he doesn't know anything, if he's an Amaretz judge.
You mean like the High Court of Majestics?
Right, so you could disqualify those judges just by saying this guy's not learned enough. But here, that's why the Mishnah is saying, but if he's certified by the Beit Din as being someone who's qualified, he's an expert, then you can't get rid of him on those grounds. Okay, so that's the first two rules of the Mishnah. Right, and Machloket Rabbi Meir and Hachamim as to both of those rules. Rule number three: Zeh postil Eidav shel zeh, zeh postil Eidav shel zeh. This one can disqualify the other one's witnesses, and this one can disqualify the other one's witnesses. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says he doesn't explain how. Here, it can't be unqualified. There must be a reason for disqualification. This litigant can disqualify his witnesses, and the other litigant can disqualify my witnesses. Right? That's Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir doesn't tell us what conditions you need to disqualify someone. And from the previous example, we saw that when he didn't qualify it, it meant that it was for any reason. But here it can't mean for any reason, because it doesn't make sense logically. Right, it can't be that Rabbi Meir allows the litigant to disqualify the witnesses just because he doesn't like them. No, I don't. Yeah, I know that you've got 400 witnesses against me, but I don't
so
like
them. How many times he came from? Yeah.
Disqualified.
How many witnesses?
We're going to see what Rabbi Meir says, because there has to be a reason to disqualify him, right? But Rabbi Meir doesn't bring the reason here.
Well, in Malchus, we covered some of the disqualifications, such as if they were relative.
That's fair.
Or if they didn't. If they weren't the ones given warning? Or. I'm sorry, none. By the way, yet.
Okay, so here, so let's see from Hachamim. So that was Rabbi Meir. Hachamim say different, right? They have a different opinion to Rabbi Meir, but we still don't really know what Rabbi Meir's opinion is here. But we know Hachamim. Hachamim omrim, amatai, when can you disqualify? Bizman shemevi aleihem raya shehen krovim opsulim. Only when you bring proof that they're related or they're ineligible for another reason, just the same way. But avalim hayukasherim. And you know what, you follow this person. But if they're kosher witnesses, if they're eligible, then you can't puzzle them. You can't disqualify them according to the Hachamim. Right? So one of the reasons why the Mishnah didn't spell out Rabbi Meir's qualifications is because it now fits very nicely. It's goes back to back with the previous one with the judging. So you can remember them easily because they're the way of writing the Mishnahs is that they mirror each other. But we're going to see that Rabbi Meir obviously must need to have a way of making them passel, and it's not just any reason to disqualify them.
Does Rashi say anything?
Rashi just explains the first case of the choosing the Beit Din. Right, Rashi says, you weren't here, Rashi says, when the Gemara says, this one chooses one, and that one chooses one, and they both choose a third, the Mishnah is talking about, apparently talking about Beit Din. He chooses one Beit Din, this one chooses another Beit Din, and those two Beit Din choose a third, and you've got nine judges now. Rashi says, this is surprising why you would need nine judges. Why does he say that? Because the Gemara is going to say that now, and the Gemara is going to say, no, it can't mean that, it means they each choose a single judge. But Rashi's holding with the first opinion before you get to the Gemara.
Mm-hmm.
And before the Gemara rectifies it, tells you what's really going on. Our scroll already tells you the answer. even at the beginning in the Mishnah. But if you're just reading the Mishnah before you get to the Gemara that tells you this is what they're talking about, you would have thought, Rashi said, you would have thought they were talking about Beit Din and not about individual judges. So that's the question. Okay, Gemara. So the Gemara now opens with that same question. What is Zeborel lo echad Zeborel lo echad? What is this thing? He chooses one and he chooses one. What's that talking about? But Tlat Asage, three is enough. We learn three is enough. The Mishnah itself starts off with the quote, Dine Mamanot v'shosha. So we know that you only need three. So when the Gemara comes along now and says, wait a minute, three is enough. Why do you say three enough? Because it's understanding that we're talking about three different Beit Din and nine judges. So the Gemara is saying, how can you have nine? Three is enough. Hachi kama. This is what it said. So the Gemara rectifies itself, says, no, don't understand it that way. Hachi kama. This is what it means. This is what it's saying. Shezeh borel lo Beit Din echad. This one just, so the first way of explaining the Mishnah is like this. This one chooses one Beit Din. And this one chooses another Beit Din. And another one chooses a third court. What does it mean? In this case, that way of understanding is, before I explain it, can someone else explain it to me? What's this new opinion of the Gemara actually saying? We said like this. So far we've got two different opinions. This is a third opinion of reading the Mishnah. Way number one. This one chooses one Beit Din. This one chooses a second Beit Din. And the Beit Din chooses a third. You've got nine judges. That's one opinion. Second opinion we learned. This one chooses one judge. This one chooses two judges. And they want three judges. We've now got three judges. Now, the Gemara is giving us a new alternative. Alternative number three. This one chooses one Beit Din. Hachi kama. Kezeh borer lo Beit Din echad. This one chooses one Beit Din. Vezeh borer lo Beit Din echad. And this one chooses one Beit Din. Shnehen borin lahen od echad. And two of them choose another one. So before, right. Right, meaning, so say it out.
In all the nine judges. Each litigate chooses one Beit Din, three, and the two Beit Din, or the two, we don't know, maybe the two litigates choose a third.
So why is that different than the opinion number one that said there was nine judges? No, the opinion of the Mishnah. The Mishnah, the Gemara says, how do you understand this Mishnah? It can't be that he chooses one Beit Din, he chooses another, and then they choose another one between. That's nine. And we know that you only need three judges. So how can it be? So the Gemara says, don't worry, I'll tell you how it can be. Meaning that the Gemara is now going
to
rectify that problem. You need nine, that you have three is enough. The Gemara is going to say, you're right, three is enough. I'll tell you what the Mishnah means, and it gives a different view.
So you choose a Beit Din, one chooses a Beit Din, and he chooses one of the people from.
Who chooses one of the people from one Beit Din?
One living. You have to go to a Beit Din, you have to approach a Beit Din, you can't approach a lawyer on his own.
Okay.
You have to go to a Beit Din, and he chooses from that Beit Din what he likes best.
He chooses one out of the three.
One out of the three, he chooses one out of the three, and those two should go to another Beit Din and choose one of them.
Okay, you see that in the words?
Exactly. I know.
You choose that. Zeborelo Beit Din Echad. may have Beit Din Echad. Okay, I hear, but it's not exactly in there.
We have to get that through.
Uh-huh. We're going to do it. I'm seeing if you can see it.
But I have a question on that logic.
Hold on. Everyone has two? Where's two?
Because one guy selects me, baby.
Yeah.
And all that, because when he wrecked the first, he had the second. Choose the second. Is it written there?
Yeah.
They say, you select one code, and all that, because when the other wrecked his first code, no, I don't know. He the second.
So how many teachers was it? Five. Let's just fill in Rabbi Elazar where we are. We're on the new Perek Shlishi, new Mishnah. We're learning about how you select a Beit Din. We have three different ways, possibilities of achieving a Beit Din. We're going to come to a conclusion, but currently we have, the Mishnah says, this one chooses one. And this one chooses another one, and both of them choose a third. What does he mean? This one chooses one, and this one chooses one.
What about the people that they mean?
So we don't know. So there's different ways of understanding it. So one way is, this one chooses one Dayan, and this one chooses another Dayan, and they both of them choose a third. Both of them choose a means either the litigants themselves choose a third, or the Dayanim themselves choose a third. And then you've got three. But the Mishnah, the Gemara says that's not the way of understanding the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about Beit Din. This one chooses one Beit Din, and then this one chooses another Beit Din, and between the two of them they choose a third. But the Gemara says, wait a minute, then you've got nine. Why do you have nine judges? You only need three. So then it says, don't worry, I have an answer. And this is the answer that we're currently on. Huh?
12? No, 12, 3, 5, 15. 15.
Why?
One guy chose one code.
Yeah.
And then the other chose one. And then the other said, no, I don't like your code. So you have to have order.
He doesn't.
This is that
chose one together.
So that is that a card.
Sorry?
Yeah. If Reuven. Invite Shimon to a Beit Din, he's writing him a letter, the Beit Din writing him a letter, Beit Din, Arab Moshe.
Okay.
He invited to come to the Beit Din that day and that day.
Yeah.
So, Nitba, he has a privilege, he has the schools to say, no, I want that this will be in the Beit Din of Rabbi Yaakov, not in the Beit Din of Rabbi Moshe.
Okay. Can the first one disqualify him and say, no, I don't like Rabbi Yaakov? Can the first one choose now, or he has to go with his court?
It's as far as I remember, it's the what Kovea, it's what the Nidba wants.
What the Nidba wants. Okay, so Yofi, so Rabbi Elazar is pointing out that there is a question about who, we're going to come on to it in a minute, the Sugi is going to deal with it. The difference between the Nidba and the Tovea, the one who's bringing a case and the one who is being accused. And there are the different rights and obligations of each one. We're going to see later on how that fits in with here. But currently we're not there yet. We're just in the normal case of choosing a Beit Din. So we came to this third option, right? Where the Gemara says, you're right, we are talking about one person picking a Beit Din and the other person picking another Beit Din and the two of them picking another one, and it still fits three. How? So it's like this: when one chooses one Beit Din, that's because he likes that Beit Din. It's his local Beit Din, his friendly Beit Din, whatever. The other one chooses the other Beit Din because he knows that, I know the guys, I go out drinking with those guys and whatever. So one, and then those two pick a third. They're the one, those two Beit Din pick a third, and we go with that third. We drop the first two, and we go into the third, the one that's picked not by us. I don't pick the Beit Din, you don't pick the Beit Din. Right? We're going to get our choices to pick the Beit Din.
Why do you first?
Huh?
everybody select first one thing, judge in the beginning.
Because they can't agree. But the Beit Din, the Batei Din aren't interested in the case. I want my case. Right? That's why you get the judges to pick. But which judge are you going to get to pick? I don't agree on your judge picking. You want your friend to pick. No, so we get two judges that we like and let them pick. Right? And then they're like, we're once removed. And then they can apparently, at least fairly objectively, choose an independent Beit Din. You're right, this one knows you, that one knows you. And we'll go to someone that doesn't know either of you. Right? And then no one can argue. Right, so that's the third alternative that the Mishnah brings, the Gemara brings as what's actually going on here.
What if you're in a small community such as Los Angeles, in which you only have two Beis Din, one in Beverly Hills and one in the Valley?
You have what you have. Here anyway, though, here we're talking about a Beit Din of three, right? And we saw that they were quite common. Not in our days, right? Nowadays, there's no one learned or anything. But in times go past, there were judges, a panel of three judges wasn't so hard to find. Right.
To get that one, to wholesale the other ones.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that you're going to wholesale this is favorable to you, and this was favorable to me. But right. The litigants actually didn't do that.
They weren't involved in the third one. So that's what the Rashi says. Why is this the third one? Because it could be that I'm allowed to apostle your court, and he's allowed to apostle my court. So then we're back to square one. Right? You just keep apostling each other's courts. So you're right, but you know what? We'll get those, and then I'm not allowed to apostle it because I've got no kesher with that third one.
Litigant
is the Tovei of the Nitva. Both of them. Mitz Dayanim. Mitz Dayanim. Okay, the Mitz Dayanim. Okay. So that's where. So this is currently at a different place to our understanding so far. We're going to come back. We're going to see later on that we're going to reject this understanding and go with the what single judge you choose one judge, he chooses one judge. But so far, everything's good, right? It's fine to understand it this way. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Va'afilu lo ve matzei me'akev." Afilu lo ve, even a lo ve. What's a lo ve and a malve?
The guy that take the money.
The debtor?
Can I ask him? He talk about person when they judges.
We don't know. From the Mishnah, we don't know what they're talking about. The Gemara is saying this is what the Mishnah is talking about. The Gemara here is saying that the Mavi Mei and Mavi and the Hachamim are arguing about Beit Din. We're going to see later and say, no, they can't be talking about Beit Din, because we're going to see a reason why not. But initially, we're saying that's what the argument is. So now the Gemara is going to bring a challenge from somewhere else. He's going to bring a challenge from the laws of Love and Malve. Malve is a lender, and the Love is a borrower. Right? Yeah. It's unfortunate you can't say the love is the lender. It would go nice if it doesn't go that way. The malve, he's the one who he's malave, he's gives it.
So right? He's the creditor.
Right, and the love is the passive receptive. He's love.
So he's the debtor.
Malave is the active, is lending, and love is the receiver, is the borrower. Love it. When I'm talking here about lender and borrower, here we're talking about a monetary dispute. So it doesn't mean only a loan case. In a loan case, you've got a lender and a borrower. But here we're talking about a dispute. So here they use the words in the art scroll, creditor and debtor. The one who owes the money and the one who has to pay it. So it could be a dispute between you and a workman. Right, and it's not a lender and a borrower between you and the workman. He says you didn't pay me, and I say I did pay you. So the one who says he's owed the money, he's the malven, if you like. And the one who needs to pay back the money is the loven, the lender, the one who has to pay back. So it's still the case of a debtor and a creditor, if you like. The one who needs to pay up, and the one who says, you were paid, if you like. So in a monetary dispute, one person's claiming money and one person's saying that you didn't give me the money back, right? But what happens in that case? There is a... Let's just read the sugya, this little piece, and then we'll explain what's going on. Afilu love matsei ma'ake. Even a love, a lender, a borrower, a debtor, matsei ma'akev, can we find that he can prevent. Ma'akev is to prevent. Something that's ma'akev is a prevention, a stop.
Like
what? Like Nimnoah, right?
It's only like a little bit, like for a while, delay.
Ma'akev is usually used in the sense of if you have a mitzvah, and a mitzvah has different conditions, right? You see, it comes up a lot in the laws of sacrifices, korbanot. Korbanot, there's a lot of different things that you need. You need a kohen, you need him not to be drunk, you need him to be qualified, you need him to be, right? All these different things. You need to have a knife that's sharp, you need to have, throw the blood on the altar. There's all different steps. And the Gemara asks over there, the Masechet Tzvachim, in a lot of cases, is this ma'akev or not? Is this part of the procedure ma'akev? Right? Does this prevent it? Is this crucial? Does this prevent it being a mitzvah? Some things are ma'akev and some things aren't. If he has long hair, so it's not ma'akev. If he's drunk, it is ma'akev. It prevents the mitzvah, right? It invalidates.
If it's not, ma'akev. It's not sure.
Right, then that's ma'akev, right? So that would be something that's required. But other things are good to have their hiddur. It's nice to have a shiny new knife, but if you don't have a new knife, it's not ma'akev.
But if the animal's not qualified because it has a blemish,
then that's also ma'akev, right? But if it's...
depends on what you speak. Because I said that if you have a long hair, it's not ma'akev. If you're drunk, it's ma'akev. What topic
is about? So we learned it yesterday in the Gemara. It said for a Kohen, Kohen's not allowed to have long hair and he's not allowed to be drunk. But there's a difference. If he's drunk, it's pasul the avodah. But if he's got long hair, it doesn't pasul the avodah. He's still not allowed.
Because for the feeling, long hair
can be ma'akev. That would be ma'akev, right? So. Usually, ma'akev is also a question of deraita and rabbanan. Right? If it's a deraita rule, then it's ma'akev, so it's deraita. Right? But if it's a rabbanan rule, so it's not ma'akev. You missed the rabbanan rule, but it's not ma'akev the mitzvah. So here, in the case of, so here we're using it in a different context. Ma'akev here means can he prevent the case? Right? Can he disqualify that case? Can he prevent it from being in a Beit Din? So we're learning that there are cases, even a debtor can prevent a case being in a certain court. He can choose to not have it in that court. Even the debtor, meaning, for a start before I know anything else, even the debtor, just from that I know, Kal v'chomer the lender. If you're telling me even the debtor can disqualify it, then for sure it's a given that the lender can. Saying even the debtor can. You wouldn't have thought the debtor could, but even the debtor can. So what's he saying? He's saying, is it true that even the debtor can? Afilu love matse meaka. Can the debtor disqualify? Why? Why is he saying this? Because we just learned, he's challenging what we just learned, right? At every point in the Gemara where you get stuck and you don't know what's going on, what is he trying to tell me here? So I have to realize, is this a challenge? Is this a new case? Is this a a question, if I work out what it is, then I can see how it fits in. So here we see it's a challenge to what we've just learned. So what did I just learn? I just learned that two baked in, that one picks a baked in, one picks a baked in, this one can disqualify that one, and therefore they choose a third one, and the third one's good. No one disqualifies that one. So now the Gemara is saying, so what you're telling me is, according to your understanding, that each one can disqualify the other. Therefore, that means that even a debtor can disqualify the creditor's court. And we see, as it's about to say, that's not true. A debtor's not allowed to disqualify the creditor's court. The creditor can disqualify the debtor's court. But the debtor is not allowed. The debtor here is the chayav, the nibah. Right? He's not allowed to disqualify the person who took him to court, who's the lender. He can disqualify the other guy's court. But I'm the one who's apparently in the wrong. Right? The debtor is the one who the claim is against. He's not allowed to do anything. Right? He's the one who's being dragged to court for not paying. He's the one who's going to have to explain himself why he hasn't paid up. He doesn't have any rights. I'm talking loosely, generally, just to get the picture. He doesn't have the ability to disqualify.
What?
Why?
Well, why he know he maybe pay back?
So he has to prove. But the fact that he was brought to court indicates that there's a claim against him. He's the one that's got a claim on him. I had to bring him to court. You could say that it was all made up and he just wanted it, but that's not the normal case. The normal case is that somebody who is brought to court for not paying up didn't pay up. That's why you brought him to court. That's your starting assumption. You're going to find him guilty or innocent, maybe, but the starting position is you don't bring people to court unless there's a reason to do it. Most cases, you do have these cases where, but not majority. Majority of cases, to actually get to a bait in and stand there and swear on oath, do all the stuff, and to sort out, you're not going to do it if it's not true. Right? Then you're going to be, right? People don't bring cases to court because they're going to be in trouble themselves if they're trying to lie and make the whole thing go up and it's a balagan. So normally that's not.
But it says here that even the debtor can prevent.
So here, that's what he's saying. So the question is, are you telling me that even the debtor can prevent? Because from your explanation of the Mishnah, where you said this one picks a court, and this one picks a court, and we can both disqualify each other, so we have to, those two courts pick a third one. So from that, it means that each one can disqualify the other. How can you say that? You're telling me that even a debtor can disqualify the lender's court? That's not true. Why not?
Posel.
The court, why not? V'ha'amar Rabbi Elezer. Rabbi Elezer said, Lo shanu ela malve. They only taught it regarding a malve. Only the creditor is allowed to disqualify. Aval lo ver, kofer oto v'dan be'irot. You can't kofin oto. You can't force him to litigate in his town. Right? You can force a debtor to litigate in the beit din of your choice. In brackets, so long as it's in his town. If it's not in his town, he's got an argument, right, that he can say, no, I don't want to have to travel to wherever you are. Fair enough. In the debtor's town. But if it's in his town, he can't disqualify it. Rabbi Elazar says that. But according to your opinion of the Mishnah, each one's allowed to disqualify. There's no rules on that. So it doesn't make sense. So this is now a challenge back to our Mishnah, the way we understood the Mishnah. It can't be that each one can disqualify the other Beit Din.
But it has to be a valid disqualification.
No, we're not talking about... We're talking just about Sam.
But I mean, going back to the Mishnah...
Rabbi Meir says that each one can disqualify without a reason.
Okay.
Both of them. The argument about disqualification is not about the Beit Din at the beginning. It's about individual judges later.
Okay.
Dayan, no. This one can posel a Dayan. Each one's allowed to posel a Dayan, but that comes after. We're currently only in the discussion about picking the Beit Din. So in that discussion about picking the Beit Din, there seems to be a problem with the with the interpretation that they're picking Beit Din. Because then we have a problem with what Rav Elazar said, that a debtor is not allowed to disqualify if it's in his own town. Okay. Good so far? Yep. So we have an answer. What's the answer that allows us to maintain our current view of the Mishnah, that allows us to have this view of one did one there? So the answer is, it's true. It is true that they can disqualify where, how. Kedamar Rabbi Yochanan, like Rabbi Yochanan said, Ba'al ka'ot shebasur yashanu. They taught it regarding the secular courts of Syria. Hachanami ba'arkot b'Suria shanu. So too over here, they taught regarding the secular courts of Syria. What do we see? We said that over there, you are allowed, even a debtor can disqualify a court, even if it's in his hometown, if you're talking about the secular courts of Syria. Right? So for sure he's still allowed to disqualify. Well, so it depends. So there's two different views about what it means. So either it means secular courts, meaning the local goyim, or it means here, according to Rashi, it means a Jewish court that's just not learned in halakha. Right? Rashi says, Shalom hayu bakim b'din Torah. They weren't expert in the laws of Torah. Hilcha chafilu lo ve matzimakem. Therefore, even a borer, a debtor, is allowed to reject it, allowed to disqualify that court. So there is a case where the debtor can, and therefore we're back to the first opinion of the Mishnah, that you can have both sides disqualifying the other. Therefore, you do need each one to pick a third Beit Din. And that view of the Mishnah is good, that we are talking about Beit Din. Each one can disqualify the other, and therefore you need each one to pick a third Beit Din. That's one answer. And then we'll finish with this second answer, which is an answer of Rav Papa. Rav Papa said, I can tell you a different answer. Afilu teima milchin. I can tell you, even if they were expert judges, the debtor is still allowed to reject the court, disqualify the court. How? Kagan, for example, Beit Dina de Rav Chuna de Rav Chista. For example, the Beit Din, the court of Rav Chuna and Rav Chista, the Kamar Lei that we said about them, or that he could say to them, the debtor could say, Mika Matachana Lach, who is bothering you? Who is causing you a problem? Why? Because here the Rashi explains the Beit Dinei of Rav Chisda and Rav Chuna, the Tarvehu Bechad Makom. They were both in the same place. So because they were both in the same place, the debtor is allowed to disqualify them because he can. He's not causing the lender any hardship. He's not causing the lender a hardship by disqualifying it. Why did we not want the lender to disqualify the court? We said, normally speaking, right, the original ruling of Rabbi Elazar was a borrower is not allowed to disqualify the court. Why? Because if he disqualifies the court that the malveh picks, then that would mean that the malveh has to come to his court. By the length, the borrower says, I'm not going over there, come to my court over here. And the malveh has to go to somewhere else. And we don't want to put the malveh to more expense, because he's the one who's already lost. You lost him money, you didn't have to pay him, and now you're going to make him spend even more money to come to a new court. So no, we don't allow you to do that to the lender. Right? But we do allow him, firstly, according to the first opinion that Rabbi Yochanan said, the case where the court is just not qualified. So in that case, they're not qualified. They're just secular courts. So for sure, the borrower, we're going to let him change the court. And also, Rav Papa says, in a different case, we're also going to let him change the court in the case where the court is in the same town, same place. So it's not a hardship. You're right. You don't like that court. Go to this court, but it's next door. It's on the next block. It's on the next day. It's in the same area. So there's no reason to not allow you to change it. So just like Rav Chista and Rav Huna had their two courts close to each other. So you're right, if you don't like Rav Huna, you can go to Rav Chista, and that's also fine.
It's not the same.
And then what we're left with is, we're back to our view of the Mishnah. Currently the Gemara is holding that the view of the Mishnah is different Beit Din. This one chooses one Beit Din, that one chooses another Beit Din. Rav Papa is saying, even if it is in his city, he can still wreck it. If there are two courts in his city, then he can also change it. Okay.
Anything on Rashi? Or did we go with?
We covered the Rashi. Yeah.